Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, January 14th. UTPB cheer continues national prep. UTPB Spirit Coordinator and Head Cheer Coach Terry Lynn Lane says they have about 96 practices until their NCAA College Finals competition in Daytona Beach, Florida in April. There are 24 cheerleaders and two Freddies, the mascot. Lane is also in charge of the 8-member dance team. The cheerleaders go to elementary and middle schools and perform at basketball, football, and volleyball games. They also get involved in community activities such as parades, Lane said. This is the squad's first national bid. Monday, they had mat tryouts at her studio, Legacy Elite, in Midland. Not everyone can make mat for Daytona, Lane said. Some schools choose to do it, others don't, but we do choose to do it, Lane said. We have about 96 practices from now until Daytona. We normally practice at UTPB. We practice here because they just redid our floors at UTPB, so it's hard for us to get our mats on right now. So we just decided to come here instead of having to bring mats and figure out where we can put them, Lane said. Alexandria Bell, Brianna Johnson, and Jericho Flores are all looking forward to their national appearance. Bell has been on the team for a year, Johnson for four, and Flores is in his fifth year. Honestly, I think it's really exciting being a new team. Our school has never gotten a bid to go to nationals, so I think it's really exciting, and with our team and how connected we are, I think we have a good chance of really being able to compete with the other teams that have been there before, Bell said. Johnson said this is a great step for the community, UTPB, and Odessa as a whole, because as we continue to grow and develop this program, it will bring talented athletes in, and we'll be able to really build a legacy based on what we've started and the work that we've put in this year, regardless of what happens once we get there, so long as we continue to work, Johnson said. Flores said they are considered an underdog as it is their first year of national competition. However, we're not letting that stop our drive and motivation. We want to show that this program isn't just some small little town college. We can bring it, and I think we're going to do everything we can to hang with the people that have been there repeatedly and give everything, Flores said. They have all watched the national competitions on TV. We're hungry. That's our edge, Johnson said. Bell added that she thinks everybody on the team is ready to work for it. I feel like since there's no film on us, no one can really watch and see what we're bringing to the table until we show up and bring it. I feel like that gives you an advantage because nobody knows what we're capable of, Flores said. Johnson recalled that a few years ago with COVID, the team almost dissolved completely. We didn't have a coach. We were trying to meet just the athletes. And so once Terry Lynn came in last year, we were really able to start from ground zero, humble ourselves, build, recruit, and just stay eager, stay focused, and stay motivated, Johnson said. The fact that we're able now to compete on a national stage is no small thing, even just getting to go. Bell came to this team about the same time as Lane. I want to say honestly that Terry has really been a great coach. She's really pushed everybody to get better. Me personally, I hadn't cheered for a whole year after foot surgery, and she already has me back in here. I'm one man stunting. I'm working on my back tuck. That's a lot of progress for just one year. I think Terry's just really ready to get this team where it needs to be for nationals, Bell said. Flores noted that the team has received more support recently than in the past. She's showing, hey, these cheerleaders are talented, and let's showcase it, Flores said. He added that UTPB has jumped on board and given them support. I also feel like that's a driving factor. I want to give back to them. They're giving their all into us, so it's only fair for the team to give back to UTPB, Flores said. This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, January 4th for the obituary and death notice section. Billy Donnie Daniel, 69, of Odessa, passed away on Wednesday, December 28th. Billy was born December 17, 1953, in Odessa. He was a lifelong resident of Odessa. He's preceded in death by his mother, Trixie McCarty, and stepfather, Tuffy McCarty, grandparents T.E. and Gladys Rudd. Survivors include his wife of 42 years, Anita Denise Daniel, daughters Margaret Franz and Anna Daniel, 9 grandchildren, brothers and sisters Charlie, Carolyn, Sue, Bobby, Carolyn, Jean, Ricky and Jesse, and best friend Dennis Salyards. Billy will have a veteran memorial service provided by the Patrol Guard of the Permian Basin on Monday, January 16th at 1 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home, 4100 FM 1788 in Midland. In Odessa, Mary Watts Redmond passed away peacefully on Tuesday, January 10th, surrounded by her loving children. Mary was born in Azle, Texas on June 2, 1942, to Obie Lynn and Luna Mae Watts. She was preceded in death by her parents, sister Sarah Watts Carver and brother Wayman Watts of Odessa. She is survived by her children, Pam and husband David Botkin of Boyd, Steve and wife Connie of Montgomery, Texas, and Philip of the Woodlands, and many, many grandchildren. Services will be held at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home, 601 North Allegheny, Odessa, Texas, at 1 p.m. on Tuesday, January 17th, followed by burial in the Odessa section of Ector County Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, please consider a donation in Mary's name to the Alzheimer's Association at www.alz.org. In Odessa, Nathan Eugene Stevens was born June 28, 1932, in Royston, Texas, and passed away Thursday, January 12th, in Odessa. N.E. is preceded in death by Norma Childers Stevens and Maxine Riley Stevens. N.E. leaves behind his children, Mark, Tracy, Riley, Lance, and sisters Gay Peters and Peggy Higgins. In lieu of flowers, please send your donation to the home hospice or your favorite charity. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Tommy Gene Staton Cochran was born September 12, 1928, in Abilene, to Velma Ann Eoff Daniel Staton and Thomas Ovise Staton. Her homegoing was on December 27th. She is survived by daughter Olivia Ann Cochran McGowan and spouse Chuck McGowan of Flower Mound and son Staton Hugh Cochran of Salt Lake City and many grandchildren. Visitation was held at J.E. Faust and Son Funeral Home in Grapevine on Monday, January 2nd, and burial service at Mount Olive Cemetery Chapel in Big Spring on January 5th. Paula Main Smith, age 70, of Odessa, passed away on January 6th in Austin. Paula was born on October 3rd, 1952, to William Paul Maines and Sammy Joe Maines in Andrews, Texas. Paula was preceded in death by her parents, William and Sammy Joe of Andrews, and husband Steve of Odessa. She is survived by her daughter Sarah and husband Jason Johnson and daughter Ellie of Austin, Texas. One sister, Glenna Maines Wheat, and husband Dr. Carol Wheat of Surprise, Arizona. A memorial service will be held at Bethany Christian Church on Friday, January 20th at 10:30 a.m., in lieu of flowers, the family requests donations be made to Bethany Christian Church, where Paula and Steve were faithful members for over 35 years. In Odessa, Marjorie Lee Langfitt, 82, died Sunday, January 8th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. In Odessa, Keith Mace, 62, died Monday, January 9th. In Odessa, no services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, January 16th. Pipelines key to cutting methane emissions. TPA TIPRU heads call for political support. The story was written by Bob Campbell. Texas's 417,000 miles of interstate oil and gas pipelines are crucial to solving the state's problem with methane emissions and flaring, and the presidents of the Texas Pipeline and Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Associations say there is an all-out effort to add what's needed. Quote, "An adequate pipeline infrastructure for Texas and the nation is absolutely vital to our national security, Americans' pocketbooks, and a stable, reliable power generation mix to fuel our homes and businesses," TPA President Thurr Cannon said from Austin. Quote, "Texas pipeline operators are doing all they can to add new capacity to pipeline infrastructure and encourage state legislators and regulators to make increasing takeaway capacity a major priority for 2023, end quote. Cannon said the large-diameter Matterhorn Express pipeline, slated to be operational in the third quarter of 2024, will move up to 2.5 billion cubic feet per day of natural gas from the Permian Basin to Katy, 30 miles west of Houston. In its third-quarter earnings call report last year, Targa Resources announced that it would lay the Daytona line to move 400 million barrels per day of natural gas liquids like ethane, propane, butane, isobutane, and pentane. Quote, "Daytona makes sense for TRGP as it rapidly grows its Permian gathering and processing systems and NGL production," Cannon said. Quote, "Recently completed lines from the basin, including the Gulf Coast Express Pipeline, Permian Highway Pipeline, and Whistler Mainline, all span west to east, connecting the Permian with either the Katy or Agua Dulce hubs," he said. The Kinder Morgan Corporation owns the Permian Highway, sending gas from the Waha Header near Cayonosa, 64 miles southwest of Odessa, to Katy, the Gulf Coast, and Mexico. The Whistler Mainline is a 42-inch-wide, 450-mile-long joint venture of the Whitewater, MPLX, WTG, and Stonepeak companies that runs from the Waha to Agua Dulce in South Texas. TIPRO President Ed Longenecker says the concept has garnered backing at the federal level, where the U.S. Energy Information Administration says natural gas production will go up nationally by 2% more this year than it did in 2022. Quote, "In both cases, 10% more than pandemic levels. The major driver of natural gas production growth is more drilling in the Haynesville region, which covers East Texas and Louisiana and the Permian Basin," Longenecker said. "Expansion projects to increase pipeline infrastructure played a major role in raising the U.S. production of natural gas. As such, it is important for lawmakers and regulators to support expanding the U.S. pipeline system to keep on track with progress," end quote. Longenecker said the EIA acknowledged this concept by saying, quote, "The pace at which these projects are completed is a notable uncertainty in our forecast, and delays could result in lower production than we expect. Without adequate takeaway capacity, such as new pipelines, producers cannot safely increase production to meet rising demand," the TIPRO leader said. Questions to ask your primary health care provider. The story was written by Carol A. Cates, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. Several years ago, the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, the AHRQ, put out a series of public service announcements on TV that really spoke to me. The announcement started with a person making a purchase. One was a car, the other was a cell phone. In each of those scenarios, the person asked tons of questions. The announcement then flashed forward to that same person in their primary healthcare provider's office, and the PCP says, Do you have any questions for me? And the person silently shakes their head no or says nope. The message of the announcement was you need to ask questions about your health in the same way you ask questions about the products you purchase. You need to make sure you ask questions when you don't know the answers and keep asking until you understand the answers. These announcements spoke to me because I cannot tell you how many times I have seen that in both my personal and professional life. I've gotten to the point with several members of my family that I either go with them to their appointments or I ask to be teleconferenced in because I ask them to talk to their PCP about a specific issue they are having, and then when I ask them what the PCP said, I get, "Oh, I forgot." As a nurse, I have gotten more times than I can count from patients, "I meant to ask and forgot, can you find out?" Or I have prompted when rounding with healthcare providers because I can tell from the conversation that the concern they expressed earlier is getting forgotten. I think the reasons are several. First, people genuinely forget to ask. There is a great deal in a PCP visit that can come up, and their questions just get forgotten. Second, I think it's the information overload that can happen in a visit to a PCP's office. Sometimes it takes time to just process and know what to ask. Third, I think people are embarrassed to ask. They don't want to sound dumb, or it's a topic that is hard to discuss with anyone. Lastly, I think people know their PCP is busy and don't want to bother them. All those reasons are good reasons, but with something as important as health, I promise your healthcare provider wants to make sure you have all the answers you need to take care of yourself. Whenever you visit your PCP or any other healthcare provider, I highly recommend discussing the questions you want and need to ask with someone else who can go with you to the appointment, or that you write your questions down. I do the second one for myself. I have a notepad I keep between appointments where I write down questions as I think of them. That way, I don't forget when I go visit my PCP. The other I think it's important to know is you are not going to shock your PCP with a question you might feel is embarrassing, and no question about health is dumb. I promise I have seen some things in the ED that people have tried to do on their own to treat a problem that have caused far more embarrassment and damage to their systems than would ever have happened if they had just brought it up with their PCP. If you are feeling overloaded, make another appointment to ask questions. Understanding is crucial when it comes to your health. And answering your questions is never a bother. People who understand take better care of themselves, which means less time in the future dealing with more complex problems. That benefits you and your busy PCP. If you are wondering what questions you should ask, here are some suggestions. 1. Do I still need all my medications? 2. Do I need to be concerned with this change in my family health history? 3. Are my bowel movements normal? 4. Am I getting enough sleep? 5. How is my blood pressure? 6. Is this, anything you're worried about, normal? 7. Would you recommend any additional annual screenings? 8. How is my weight? 9. What do I need to do between now and my next visit? 10. Is there anything you think I might have missed? The National Institute of Health's National Institute on Aging has a great video on preparing for a visit to your PCP, as well as additional tips on questions you ask on their website at tinyurl.com/dy2jh5jn. This year, as we discussed last week, make it a priority to develop a relationship with a primary health care provider, and as you develop that relationship, make sure you ask questions. Your health will benefit. Here are some Odessa American quick hits. MLK Celebration. The Black Cultural Council of Odessa has scheduled Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Brunch, Freedom March, and Candlelight Vigil today. The King's Brunch will take place from 10 a.m. to noon with Speaker Mary Wills, former Odessa City Councilman, at the Woodson Community Center, 1010 East Murphy Street. Freedom March lineup will follow at the Southside Senior Citizen Center, 900 South Dixie Boulevard. The march will begin at 1 p.m. Prizes will be presented. The Odessa Alumni Chapter of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Incorporated, will present a candlelight vigil following the parade at Woodson Community Center. For vigil information, call Sheila Stevenson at 432-385-5652. The theme is A Day of Service, Unity. Visit odessabcc.org or tinyurl.com/4mms2j4z. MLK Reading Events. Volunteer Services at Medical Center Hospital will be hosting two separate reading events for children at 10 a.m. and at 2 p.m. today as part of its Martin Luther King Day of Service in the South Admitting Lobby. MCH volunteers will be reading a few books for the children in attendance. All children, elementary level or below, are invited to attend along with parents or guardians. Anyone coming to the event can enter through the main admitting entrance and simply turn right toward the south end of the lobby. Frozen Day. Mr. Gaddy's Pizza, 2750 North Grandview Avenue, has scheduled Frozen Day from 11 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. today. Anna, Elsa, Kristoff, and Olaf will be in the store all day for fun and photos. The Frozen movies will be showing nonstop throughout the day. Visit tinyurl.com/3vtzkmn2. ORTA Meeting. The Odessa Retired Teachers has scheduled a meeting today at the Highland United Methodist Church, 1808 North Dixie Boulevard. A free lunch will be served at 11:30 a.m., followed by the meeting. COLA information will be discussed. For more information, call 432-337-5116. MLK Jr. Luncheon. The Negro Business and Professional Women's Club of Midland, Incorporated, has scheduled a luncheon honoring the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. at 11:30 a.m. today at 2100 Butternut Lane in Midland. Visit tinyurl.com/BDFM6SZK.
This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, January 14th. To your good health. Are liquid and pill the only forms of colonoscopy preparation? Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 67-year-old female who has been unable to tolerate both liquid and pill forms of colonoscopy preparations. Therefore, my gastroenterologist has been unable to complete a colonoscopy. What are my other options? Answer: I would consider an alternate form of colon cancer screening. Home stool tests look for blood and DNA for colon cancer, or both. The data on Cologuard, a commonly available brand, show it isn't quite as good as a colonoscopy, but much better than not receiving screening. However, if the result is positive, you will certainly need additional testing, which will require a preparation, possibly requiring you to get the preparation done under supervision.
Hello, I'm Susie Haynes reading the Midland Reporter Telegram, Dear Abby, for Saturday, January 14th, 2023. Relative who abused child will be at get-togethers. Dear Abby, years ago, my child was sexually abused by a relative. After I found out, I reported it, which made the abuser's family very upset. charges were filed and there were court dates, probation, and counseling. To date, everything the judge required of the abuser has been legally fulfilled. While I'm glad everything was completed, I'm still not comfortable having him around my child or any of their younger siblings. The extended family wants to have a large family gathering, like were held in the past, and they are so happy we can all be together again. Is it bad that I still don't want my child and other children around the abuser? Is it bad I don't want my child to have to spend every major holiday and celebrations with their abuser in the same space? It bothers me that everyone is celebrating the return of this pedophile and disregarding my child's feelings as if nothing ever happened. Am I wrong to feel this way? What's the best way to handle this? Shell-shocked mother in Colorado. Dear Shell-shocked, you are not wrong. You are a loving, caring, vigilant, and protective mother. The best way to handle this would be to forego family gatherings at which the abuser will be present. A victim of sexual abuse should not be required to ever be in that person's presence again. Dear Abby, this may seem strange to complain about because most people would love to get flowers. My boyfriend of 3 years sends a dozen red roses every couple of months to my workplace. It's not related to a birthday or anniversary, it's just because. It would be fine if they were sent to our home, but sending them to my workplace makes it seem like he wants to send a message. It feels controlling somehow. I feel like a spectacle and uncomfortable. I don't want to say anything to him and hurt his feelings when he's trying to be nice, but I just want it to stop. He thinks my late husband gave me flowers all the time because when we moved, I had 30 vases or more, but most of them were from bouquets I received after his death. Plus, when my late husband gave me flowers, it was usually after he did something hurtful. So, yes, I do have a negative connotation about flowers. But still, saying something to him about stopping makes me as queasy as actually getting the flowers. Please help. Overblossomed in the West. Dear Overblossomed, open your mouth. Your boyfriend is not a mind reader. Tell him everything you have written to me. He needs to know why you feel the way you do about receiving flowers, and also that sending them to your workplace is distracting and feels intrusive. If he feels he must give you public demonstration of his adoration, he should make it a nice box of candy that everyone can enjoy. Dear readers, in the words of Martin Luther King Jr., who in 1968 was martyred in the cause of civil rights and whose birthday we remember today, we must accept finite disappointment, but we must never lose infinite hope.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.